never quit. Blue team never quit. Team never quit radio.
You ever think about quitting?
It's the combat of life, hammering the snot out of you.
Well, stand by, dig in deep, and get ready to get fired up with us.
Welcome to the Team Never Quit podcast, the number one podcast that inspires you to fight on. I'm your host, David Rutt Rutherford, here with Mr. Never Quit himself, Marcus Luttrell.
Our mission is to help you embrace the suck of life, to teach you the values of working your ass off, and to interview the most hard-charging people on planet Earth.
We know life is hard. It's time for you to suck it up, Buttercup, and let us teach you to persevere in every environment imaginable by sharing real-world lessons learned by those who never quit. That's right. It's time, Marcus, for us to help them defeat the negative insurgency in their lives.
You fire me up. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's roll.
Let's roll. I'll tell you what, Marcus, I will tell you what, I have done just about every sport a human being can do, right? I've tried it ever. Mm-hmm. Except I haven't done that badass thing in Afghanistan where they run around, they ride around with the dead sheep and throw it in the circle. You know what I want? I'm talking about
horseback, that tribal game.
Yeah.
It's old as the
days. It's like 2,000, yeah. 3,000 years old. I've never done that one, but I've done almost every other one. And you know what brings me to my knees? You know what? The sport that actually makes me crumble down to my knees in the fetal position, sucking my thumb in OBE, overcome by events, condition black.
Mm.
You know what it is?
Is it the Wheel of Cheese Chase? More of that to come.
Oh, my God. I hope that comes out. No, it's not the Wheel of Cheese Chase. It's not swimming. It's not running. It's biking.
Biking.
Bro, I got to tell you, it's one of the most brutal things in the planet. And now, you know how I know this? I'm going to tell you how I know this. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I got out of teams, I was engaged to this wonderful, wonderful girl for a little bit of time. And she was like a professional biker. I mean, she was amazing. So, in turn, guess what I had to do? Yeah. I had to bike. So, the first thing she ever got me was one of them Trek Postal Service bikes, dude. And, like, the first month or two I'm back out of the teams, back in Florida, she's like, hey, we're going to go for a ride this weekend with the whole local bike shop and all that. I'm like, yeah, check Roger. I'm in, man.
It's biking.
It's biking, wizard.
Been doing that since I was like four.
Right? It's the easiest thing on the friggin' planet. We rode from Boca Raton to Palm Beach and back. It's like, I don't even know. It's like 60-some mile ride, right? By the time we had gotten to Palm Beach, I literally was shaking in my core. We turned around and got back, hit Lake Worth. I had to pull over, roll off the bike because I couldn't get those damn clips out, right? I've fallen on my ass. Literally on my ass.
Just go to a stop, fall over.
Right over the side in the grass, thank God. And I'm sitting there like, because my whole body cramped, my calves, my feet, my legs. And I'm literally shaking. She gets off the bike. Meanwhile, the whole, what do you call it,
Peloton.
The Peloton, whatever that is. Is sitting there like looking back at me because they all knew I'm a frog man, right? And they're all like, what the? And she gets off, comes over, stands up above me. And she goes, get your ass up. You are embarrassing me.
Right.
And I said, you know what? Bank you.
Right.
I can't move. Get help. Call the paramedics. Bro.
Man. My first bike story is kind of similar to that too because I love watching the Tour de France, and I've come to realize that if you're that good, you really love that bike, right? I mean, that's a real thing. I mean, I'd come out of Danny's one night, just pretty liquored up, and somehow walked into Holland Bikes.
Yeah, right
and
there. The dude,
I mean, that chick that works in there rolled me up, dog. Like, you ever ridden before? I was like, absolutely. You know what Frogman curse is? It's we think we can do anything.
Dude.
I can ride a damn bike. Give me them big skis. Over, you know, that kind of deal. Man, it was custom made and measured and, you know, specialized with matching clip on shoes. and rolled me up, man. I mean, I paid for everything. Sure.
Yeah, like $2,000.
Yeah, yeah. The best part of the story is we finally get to the team, and one of the, I forget who it was, man. It was a heavy rider. Like, he's like, hey, Latrell, I like your bike, man. You know, ready to go for a ride? And check it. So when you're riding those kind of bikes, if you're not in the specific garb, the uniform of the day, you look like an idiot, right? You know how you look like an idiot? Check it out.
Silkies.
Yeah, yeah. So I had all that going with the helmet and all that, and was clipped in, and we had come up this hill, and I had never clipped out with those shoes before. And I'm in that garb, and you only look like an idiot in the garb when you don't know what you're doing. And we're at this hill, dude, and I fall over into this cattle. It's this old... little Cadillac with this old lady driving it, and she took off. I was laying on the side of the cart. I thought I was trying to break in. I kept falling into it, I couldn't clip out, dude. And I had that ridiculous outfit on, man. And I fell into the street, man. My foot came out, thank God. So check it. We finally get back, and I had a grinder reminder, but mid level. I never had one before. You know, you don't have the right saddle.
Oh,
you know, if you never put that part of yourself in training before, and you know our grinder reminder, that whole backside, we can't feel anything except for that spot.
Bro,
that's where I was like, you really have to love this job to sit in that saddle.
Dude, there are stories about dudes becoming. They can't have kids sterile because they ride their bike so much, bro.
Right. Check it out. I got that right before we went on deployment. And I had it in the team under the stairs, right?
Yeah.
And I come back off deployment and it's gone. Somebody needed it more than I did. But anyways, when I was going to kind of file a claim for it, and the Navy said it wasn't in a secured area because I didn't have it chained. I was like, it's behind two coded entry level high security gates and two passcodes and under our stairs at a SEAL team, the most secure position on the planet. I'm sorry.
That's because one of your buddies took it.
Yeah, yeah. They're laughing
did
right
you
now.
A favor.
They still got it. Sure.
Yeah. Did you a favor.
Oh, totally. Got it, man. Thank you for saying that
did
right
you a
there.
Favor.
Yeah. Thank you.
I actually walked up into the admin and got on the 1MC. I was like, good, whoever. Took my bike. So then you knew I was definitely not getting it back, right?
Ever, dude. Ever.
So that's
ever.
My bike story.
I tell you what. In all kidding aside, if you've ever done it or you're doing it, you've done triathlons, you've done whatever, you've gotten on that bike, done a road race, man, hats off to you. Because that endurance sport, my mind, is...
triathlon. The triathletes, too, man. You know, Morgan Hall and JT,
they're
not done at the end of the day being a frogman. That was hard for me.
Yeah. Right?
And then they want to get out and go ride 500 miles on a bicycle.
Yeah, let's... Hey, dude.
Jump back in the water.
Yeah, let's go ride 200 miles on a... Nah.
I don't want to do that.
Medics don't do that.
No,
you know?
Exactly.
We got to go exercise our brain.
Exactly. We got to make sure we're calm at all times.
That's what you call it.
That is totally what
calm
they
at all
call
it. I've sewed more of our guys up in the bars and stupid stuff like that.
Hands down.
That's awesome.
Well, listen, welcome to the Team Never Quit podcast. I'm your host, David Rutt Rutherford, here with Mr. Never Quit himself, Marcus Latrell, and the man behind making this whole shenanigan come together, the Wizard. Hey, are we going to get him a hat?
Mm-hmm.
We got to get them.
Don't waste your money.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah. Could we get you which hat would you wear if we got it for you?
Probably the one on my head.
Oh,
I've already got that one.
Come on, dude. You got to jump into the character.
This is new.
Right?
This is new.
It is new.
I made 9 inch, right?
He makes most of his hats.
9 inch nails, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Trent Reznor, if you're listening, we want you on the show, bud. God bless
you.
Yeah,
Trent, you out there?
We need you on the show.
You can call me anytime.
Well, welcome to the Team Never Quit podcast. We're so unbelievably honored and privileged to have this show, to be out there, to be having the insane success we are because of our listeners, man. If you're a repeat customer for us, thank you so much. We're so incredibly blessed that you keep coming back and that you share the show with your friends and family and all those people that you know that might be in their never quit moment right now. Because that's our mission, man. Continue serving this country, this great world we live in, with positive content that will help the listener figure out how to navigate the most difficult obstacles in life, how to overcome adversity, how to get down dirty and suck it up, Buttercup, and grin and bear it and make it through to the other side. All right, if this is your first time tuning in, this is your first time listening to the show, have we got a doozy for you, don't we, Marcus?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you want to talk, never quit, man. I mean, this is huge.
Going through it right now. You're about to bring somebody on here who's going through their never quit story.
Literally, like, in the abyss of never quit.
A deep
one. You can't get much worse.
You jumped in the deepest water I ever heard of.
What is that, the Marianas Trench or whatever it's called? Never. Is that the deep? That's where old Lance is
about this one.
We're going to get down in there with a sub and start talking to him. But before we do.
That's all right. We speak deep water.
You do.
That's right. You do.
Yeah, bro. We were not dumb enough. We were not dumb enough to sign up for SDV. I'm
trying to get out of it, so call to me. That's really the best team for me because I like to hunt more than I like to do the other thing.
Hands down, that was the best experience
exactly,
for you.
Yeah, I had to go there.
Hands down. And that's kind of the theme, I bet, for our show today, right? Uh-huh. If you want to learn life's greatest lessons, you got to learn them the hard way, plain and simple. That is just the way it is, man. And so having, you know, the incredible Lance Armstrong. Now, I know when I say that, I feel the daggers coming out through the airways, through the Google itself, right? Mm-hmm. And that people are going to be a little upset just for the fact that we brought the man on the show. What do you think, Wizard? Are we going to get a little of that?
I think whoever's turned off right this moment, hang in there for a couple more, and we're going to convince you this is worth listening to. I'm a big fan of this guy. We all are.
I'm a massive fan.
Regardless of what he's been through before, he's going to have a lot of valuable information to put out.
Oh, well, that's not what I'm sure here. This is the Team Never Quit podcast, right? And there's plenty of other podcasts, talk smack, you know, do all that mess.
That's not what we do.
I agree with that stuff.
So here's, before we get into it, Wizard, would you do us, and our listeners a favor and give a little brief back on the magnitude of this dude's accomplishments and failures, please.
Yeah, absolutely. of course, everybody knows, unless you've been living in a deep, deep, dark cave, Lance Armstrong. So I'm going to hit some of the broad brush strokes here. He's from Texas. At 13, he took up competitive cycling, triathlons. 16, he became a professional triathlete, actually. Then he started to focus on biking, which is what he's most known for at 18. First, he would join the U.S. Olympic development team at a train in Colorado Springs. Now, from there up until 1996, he did a lot of winning. And I could name all these, but you're just going to get bored. It's so amazing. But up until 1996, he still hadn't won a Tour de France. 1996 hits, though, and this is his first major check with reality. His first never quit story here, probably. 1996, he gets diagnosed with testicular cancer. They were in his abdomen, in his lungs. He actually had some in his brain. He went through surgeries, managed to recover from this.
Nuts.
Comes out of that and becomes the most dominant cyclist in the world.
In history.
In history. Comes out of that. 1998, he wins the Tour of Luxembourg. Performs amazingly well. Nobody's expecting this. I mean, he had been dropped from his team when this happened. Nobody believed that he was going to be able to pull himself, you know, back, do this incredible recovery. 1999, wins the Tour de France for the first time, does it again in 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005.
See ya day.
And then he retires. Comes back to competition again in 2008, does a few things, and fades away from it. Now, the next big thing, which a lot of people are going to be aware of, is the drug controversy surrounding him, the doping, which was not just him. This was the cycling world at large.
At large.
During that era.
Got to let me read something here once you're done. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, we have to get into that. But just let me cover how this went down roughly. When I said the beginning of this kind of started in 2001 with the inquiries of this of a sports writer.
Walsh,
right, who started shredding information on the drug use in the sport. 2010, a former teammate of Lance's, Floyd Landis, he lost his 2006 Tour de France win due to drug use.
Doping.
2012, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency eventually charges Armstrong officially. what comes out of that is a lot of denial at first, an eventual conviction of it, and then his admission first came out 2013 on the Oprah Winfrey Show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bro, his denial, though,
you don't get
it
any,
started early, dude.
You don't get anything past Oprah.
Oh, he carried that on through...
To day one.
From day one. Yeah. He maintained the story, maintained the story, mm-hmm. maintained the story.
What was that? What was the name of that documentary that it's like, I don't know. I forget it. What it is. There's a sick documentary where it really describes the magnitude of his doping, of the team's doping, the length of which they went about, the culture of it, and all that. I mean, there have been people out there that have said that one guy actually from the United States Drug Administration or whatever, the people that were prosecuted, federal prosecution, that were saying it, his team and the U.S. Postal team was the most elaborate doping scandal or most elaborate doping process in sports history. You know, that's a profound statement.
It is. The evidence, he said, the evidence shows beyond a shadow of a doubt that the U.S. Postal Service pro cycling team ran the most sophisticated, professionalized, and successful doping program the sport has ever seen. That was Travis Tigert, chief executive of the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency.
There are other people that would comment as the biggest doping scandal in sports history. And you know, what's kind of funny is, man, you look at the Russians right now, just got canked from the... the Winter Olympics, the Russians all the way back to the 60s, the Chinese, you look at the East Germans, you look, I mean, doping, I mean, hell, look at professional football from as far back, and even now, I guarantee.
Well, you got the in baseball as well, right?
Right, cortisol, you get steroids in baseball, the Bond story, all that. The reality is, and here's the deal, coming from an industry where the advantage is a life and death situation. And, you know, I believe there's going to always be something within the human condition when it comes to victory that drives you towards a moral ambiguity. And I think the requirement for winning as it relates, at least in our world, in terms of, man, if I can be bigger, faster, stronger, and be able to get to my weapon quicker and carry my buddy out longer distance, man, I'm going to explore what that looks like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, flip it to the other side. It's not life and death. Well, for fighters, it is, right? I mean, for fighters, for sure. And that's why the UFC's cracking way down on it. In fact, the guy who did the investigation on Lance Armstrong is now the head guy for the UFC and has cracked way down. And I think, you know, that competitive advantage, if you're all juiced up and you could kill somebody in the ring, right, or in the cage. But in these other sports, man, if you're playing 162 games in baseball or you're riding for three straight weeks in this and your back kills, your knees kill and all that, man, a shot of cortisol doesn't seem like a big deal, doesn't it? You know, a little human growth hormone or to put some extra oxygen in my blood.
Well, when you have reached a level where the difference between the top competitors is so minute and minuscule and you are killing yourself to simply augment your performance, that hair, you know, of a raisin, you know, of performance, the temptation for grabbing for any advantage you can get, like you said, the moral ambiguity, I'm sure it's much easier to justify.
And I'm not trying to justify breaking rules. I hope the listeners aren't misinterpreting what I'm saying. All I'm saying is any advantage you can get in your life when a lot is on the line, people have a natural propensity to explore it.
You gotta understand, if this was when you said that most elaborate doping scheme in sports history, that tells me it didn't start right there with him. He was just the end of it. He's the one that modified it in a way to where it was so ridiculous that it brought the whole thing down. In a sport, if it's pure and all the athletes are competing, and there's one dude, just one guy cheating, the whole sport would be like, "Nah, you're out of here, Jack." It's that and the other. But if it's, and that's the crazy thing about those guys is they're so intense. I mean, he was winning all the way up till the, and then when the Tour de France, and you get in there and that competition keeps changing hand over fist, you get older, but you want to still ride. There's a 100 million things that goes into an athlete's head to stay relevant. If I can't beat these guys the way I should be able to with just my normal human body,
yeah.
But they're beating me because they're on a little something extra. Well, then let's just see how I react on a little something extra.
Well let me.
And you saw what happened.
Let me read you an interesting story by this guy, Cork Gaines, from the Business Insider. And he wrote this article on January 2nd, 2015. Let me just read it real quick, a portion of it. Even after Lance Armstrong finally came clean and was banned from cycling for life, many still defended the unofficial 7-time Tour de France champion. The biggest argument for Armstrong is the belief that all riders were doping. We have known for a while now that a lot of cyclists were doping. A recent breakdown of the extent of the EPO era, named for the most common drug, erythropoietin, blood EPO, shows everybody was doing it. Defense may not be that far off. Teddy Cutler of sportingintelligence.com recently took an excellent and detailed look at the top cyclists from 1998 through 2013. And whether or not they have been linked to blood doping or have links to doping or a doctor linked to blood doping. During this 16-year period, 12 Tour de France races were won by cyclists who were confirmed dopers. In addition, of the 81 different riders who finished in the top 10 of the Tour de France during this period, 65% have been caught doping, admitted to blood doping, or have strong associations to doping and are suspected cheaters. And here's the big one. You ready? Drum roll, please. More importantly, for Lance Armstrong, during the 7-year window when he won every Tour de France, 1999 to 2005, 87% of the top 10 finishers, 61 out of 70, were confirmed dopers or suspected of doping.
That's the thing about competition. It was those guys who did that pushed it and kind of took it that way. And ultimately, man, lying to your people if you're taking in the celebration and the rewards hand over fist, and then you can't crap all over them.
Well, here's the deal. And this is what I think is the pivotal aspect of our show and why it's so important to get him on, which we will in just a second here. But it's really the consequence he faced for living out the scandal, for living the lie, for cheating as bad as he did and lying about it and lying to his friends, throwing his friends under the bus, throwing the people, building this whole organization, which, you know, quite frankly, Livestrong did a lot of good for a lot of people, man, with cancer. Mm. But all built on this tremendous lie that he emphatically and demonstratively denied over and over and over again. So that's what I'm really interested to hearing about.
Me too, man, because when it comes to messing with our people, you can bet any luxury he was extended on the good side, you're going to be reaping it on the other side.
Amen. Listen, everybody makes mistakes, but how much you're going to screw up is how much you're going to pay on the other end. So, what do you think, gents? Should we bring Lance Armstrong on?
Can't wait.
Yes, sir.
Wizard, drum roll, please. All right, now, our guest knows what it's like to pay, man, because this guy absolutely understands how much it sucks when you're getting hammered. Not only when you're getting hammered physically, but when you're getting hammered mentally, when you're getting hammered emotionally, when you're just getting hammered. And he's got the grit and the determination to fight through all of it, brother. All of it. There is no quit in this cat. There is no quit in no matter what. And all you got to do is just go back and look at the fact that cancer couldn't kill him. The tour couldn't kill him. And basically the world can't kill him. And because he's coming back with a vengeance, because you know what he is? He's a never quit son of a bitch. And that's what I love about this guy. What do you think, dude?
I've been waiting a long time for this in 2005 when I was in the hospital, when they pulled me out.
Right.
Some of the teammates, they went and found him while he had that teammate hat on during that press interview.
Yeah.
That's all I watched while I was recovering in there. So, and he blew it out of the water that year.
Yeah,
it was awesome,
man.
It was
awesome.
The motivation is absolutely correct, man, and it came at a perfect time for me, so I've been excited.
Awesome. So what do you say? What do you say, gents? Let's bring him on. Let's bring Mr. Never Quit on. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Mr. Lance Armstrong. Lance, so grateful that you're on the show, brother. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Sure. Awesome. Now, here's the way we start out, man. We got to get loosened up. We got to get limbered up. We got to warm up a little bit, especially because nowadays we've been blowing up so much, our gray matter's a little mushy. So what we do is we do this fun little thing called the Mad Minute. And the Mad Minute is just a rapid fire series of questions at you. And your first thing that pops into your head, no matter what, just shoot it out. First answer. You understand how this is going to roll, brother?
I understand, but I just want to say that bullshit about needing to warm. I mean, I just listened to you for 3 minutes. You don't need to warm up.
Told you.
You're going 100 miles an hour. I mean, what are we going to do? Go 500 now?
Well, That's the plan.
These rabbit holes have different speeds. You know the deal.
You can't leave it at one speed. You got to ratchet up to the next, then the next. That's awesome.
All right, I got you.
All right, Marcus, fire away.
Should Texas be its own state?
Yes.
I mean, I'm sorry. I was like, that didn't even make sense when I said it.
He was a little confused on that. Like,
I thought we took care of that about 100, you know, whatever years ago.
You know you're gonna get crucified for that one, Mark.
Oh, man.
All right. Should a hearse carrying a corpse be allowed to drive in the carpool lane, yes or no?
Yes, absolutely.
Dude,
so should a pregnant lady.
Great answer.
Absolutely.
Dude, I didn't think of that one. I always go back
what
to
about
the
schizophrenics.
That's a whole next level, dude. If you're schizo, well, how many personalities would constitute one actual other? Or is it just one? That's deep. Dude, I always
and anybody that goes through the effort of getting a blow up doll in the back seat or in, you know, then they get to drive in there too.
Oh, man. So in Coronado, you used to have to come over that big bridge and you'd go onto the island and you had to pay a toll. Well, it was notorious. Like, you hadn't gotten your stripes at the team unless you'd gotten busted for a mannequin in your passenger seat all dressed up in your Bud's uniform.
Military uniform.
All right. Now, my question. Here we go. What is the greatest sporting event that has ever taken place in the history of mankind?
A massive question.
Oh, God.
Heavy.
Obviously, I think the Tour de France is a pretty special sporting event just because of its history and its difficulty. But there's an event that I'm sort of making this up, but there's an event at Indiana University called the Little 500. And there was a movie made about it called Breaking Away a long, long time ago.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah. And if you, every American sports fan should go to Bloomington and watch the Little 500 at least once. It is so fucking epic. The procession, the way they come in, just the way the race it goes down, the crashes. It is one of the coolest events to watch live that I've ever seen.
I love it. I never would have guessed that.
I gotta check that out. Dude, I remember that movie, though.
Dude, Dennis Quaid, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. One of his best movies of all time, bro. All right, shoot. Fire away.
All right. Who has the best man cave you've ever been in?
Ooh, the best man cave. You know, nobody, most people listening are going to know him, but my business manager he was real sneaky about it. He built out this man cave that I just thought he was like storing his bikes and shit in there and had his work stand. But it is so dope, this thing. I mean, between bikes and alcohol and TVs and, you know, he's probably got some magazines in there. I don't know what else.
old school, baby.
Old school man cave. If you're ever in Austin, I'll... shit, it's out. It's like outside, underneath the house. We don't even need to go in. We'll just walk around and go. Just
if we get by, like, I just had to see this, sir.
Hey man, don't mind us. Yeah. Don't mind us. We're just here to see your man cave. All right, Wizard, all right. Fire away. Yep.
All right, Lance, if you had to dedicate your life to becoming world champion of one of the following, which would you choose? If you need explanation, just ask. Chess boxing, number one. Number two, cheese wheel chasing. Or number three, shin kicking. These are all actual sports that exist in the world.
Well, the third one I can figure out. The one and two, chess boxing and cheese wheel chasing. I need a little detail on them.
All right. Chess boxing. Chess boxing consists of 11 rounds where the competitors alternate between one round of chess, one round of boxing, one round of chess, one round of boxing. Cheese wheel chasing is based on a very large hill where they take a large wheel of cheese, approximately 18 inches in diameter, throw it down the hill, and people chase it. The first one to reach the bottom wins.
Man, that's a tough
call. Shin kicking is simply kicking each other in the shins until someone quits.
Jesus.
Ow.
Well, I can tell you right, number three, I'm out. I mean, there's no way I'd do anything to not be doing that.
But,
that's just horrible. And number one, I don't know how to play chess, so I'm out on number one. I guess, and I'd rather just run. I mean, I can fucking run downhill. I'll be number two. Cheese chasing.
There you go.
That is the next world championship for you, Lance.
I love the process
wheelchair.
Of elimination.
By the way, I saw somebody sent me this post on Instagram the other day, and this is, it must be real. And you guys, I'll send it to you later. But it's like a blindfolded 100-meter dash. Have you seen this?
No,
that's brilliant.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
So they have all the stands and shit on the side, and one of the dudes, you see him coming, like he's veering off, and he just. He runs head first right into the stand.
Jesus. Yeah, I need to see that.
You gotta send it.
That's
oh,
awesome.
God. All right. As the former future world champion of cheese wheel chasing, your next question is, what is your favorite thing to watch with your kids? Like Saturday morning cartoons like us when we were kids, but what is your favorite thing to watch with your kids?
Well, it's a tough answer. I have five kids, so you know they're all the way from 8 to 18, and you know, as you know, this younger generation, all they watch is YouTube. You can't get them to sit down and watch TV. They just look at their iPad and watch YouTube. It's crazy. Mm. You know, my boys, they love football. We sit around and just watch football. My 16-year-old twin girls don't want to talk to me ever, so it doesn't matter what they watch. you know what I do love though? I love just down the street here at the Bob Bullock, Texas History Museum, they have an IMAX. So I do like taking the kids over there. That IMAX shit, especially in 3D is
epic.
Super cool. Although I will also say last weekend, my wife and my 8-year-old were gone. So I was just here with my 7-year-old and we had a date set up to go watch this thing. And last minute, she's like, I don't want to go. Totally stood up.
You got stood up on your on a date.
Right? Yeah, right? I've got two little girls. I've got a 7 and a 5-year-old, Lance, and right now I am immersed in My Little Pony. It's my own torture, I think, from all my years of whatever, but it's coming true.
I got a wide spectrum like that, too. I got football, Princess Bride, and Lonesome Dove. They'll all stick around for those. Other than that, it's just like
that.
He said.
I love the fact that your 5-year-old watches Lonesome Dove. That's my favorite. All right, last question. Go ahead, Marcus.
All right, brother. Your favorite place to relax?
On the golf course.
Cool.
Yeah, I love golf too, man. It is the most relaxed. I mean, if you could play any sport, right? You get to travel, see beautiful scenery. Weather's usually
golf,
always going to be good,
golf.
Right? Some semblance of shape.
Right.
Are we trying to kill you, kick you in the nuts or anything like that?
Kicking the shins, chasing cheese.
Yeah, chasing cheese. Down like down.
Dude, golf is the dream sport, especially if you're just doing it relaxing. All right, that is the Mad Minute. Lance, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Now, you're warmed up. I'm warmed up. Everybody's warmed up. But the reason why you're here, obviously, is for your incredible story and stories of life. And that's why listeners were so blessed. They come to our show because they come because they're all in their own struggle, as we all are in this whole world, facing our greatest fears and trying to overcome the obstacles that are that feel like the weight of the world are under us. And we have the great blessing to be able to deliver some of the most incredible stories that exist out there. So without further ado, Lance, would you please share your greatest never quit story or stories with our listeners?
So, you know, I mean, I kind of have three of them, right? I mean, it for the first 25 years of my life, you know, it was pretty chill, primarily, you know, tension free or conflict free until 25. I'm diagnosed with very advanced testicular cancer that spread to my abdomen, you know, 10 tumors in the lungs and 2 spots in the brain. So that was the first time where I was like, in my life, I was like, wow. Mm. All right. So this is what resistance feels like. And I won't bore you with how the whole thing went down, but that was the moment. And it really, I mean, obviously I was faced with a 50-50 chance of survival, but it did change me forever. And in a lot of ways good, and a lot of ways not so good. And, so that was a big one. And then a couple of years later after that, I was back on the bike, back in the sport and back in the tour. And as an athlete, the disease and going through that completely changed the way that I viewed training and racing and competition and competitors and most of it, again, most of it good, some of it not so good. I mean, I came back, it was cancer is a life and death scenario and sports isn't, but I took the life or death mentality into sports. Right. And so, winning was surviving and losing was dying. And that's, you know, while some fans like that, you know, it's, you have to remember that, you know, you're also dealing with people.
Right.
And so that was sort of fucked up. That's where I didn't have, I didn't have that monitor on that at the time. And that's where I got in trouble. Right. And then, the third part is really just been the last 5 years of my life, which has just been a colossal meltdown, in many ways. And when I say meltdown, I mean, socially, financially, publicly in the press, et cetera, to do is use to pull off those first two experiences and try to help those two help me and my family, because we're all in this together, navigate through this shitstorm, right? And so, you know, I think people show up in my house, you know, that I hadn't seen in years or whatever, or meet me out somewhere, and they're like, well, I'll probably find him curled up in the corner somewhere, just you know, tripping out. And they don't, right? I mean, that isn't my MO. I'm not a quitter. I'm not a crier. And you know, I'll fully confess to all of my faults, but fuck it, man. You got to move on and you got to move forward and you know, get on and get over it.
Well, wow. And that's what I think is so phenomenal about you. Like we just had Bernie Carrick on the other day, and he has a story that's similar to yours. He has this incredible rise to the pinnacle of servitude and the, you know, the police commissioner in New York City, and then he moves into almost being nominated as director of Homeland Security. Then he gets hammered with this tax evasion and has to do time, and comes back from, and now is coming back from that,
and all on the world stage, very
all on
very
the world
public.
Stage, which is and you know, that was in what I love about your openness and honesty, and I highly recommend anybody that's listening to go back and listen to all of Lance's most recent interviews, because they're really profound, is your spectrum of awareness in what never quit is and how it can be used again and again, but morphing into the relevant situation that you're in. So if we could for a second, can you go back to that life and death awakening? Because this is something we talk a lot about as former SEALs and guys that dealt with that, you know, what we were willing to do in terms of the spectrum of morality, you know, is we pushed those boundaries because it was life and death. And can you go back to what it's like to be told that you might die and how that changed your perspective for a little bit?
Well, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people are in that situation every day. And even more unfortunately, a lot of them are on the bad side of the scenario, which is 1,500 Americans a day die from the disease. So it's crazy. The number is staggering. But when I, so I, you know, in that situation, you know, obviously you're like, oh, well, fuck, I didn't plan for this. I don't even know what, I don't even knew anybody that had cancer. I mean, you can't Google anything. so you're not, I mean, this is in 1996. I mean, right. there was no WebMD or Google. You're like, fucking, I was like taking pamphlets and flyers from the doctor's office. I'm like, no, this is what? Yeah. Think about that. Like nowadays you'd run your ass home, get on your computer and you'd have, you know, millions of pages of information. And so this was just different. And which just basically is another way of saying it was, I was just confused. And so, but the moral of the story is what I then set out on this path and process to try to find the best care possible, to find the best doctors, the best nurses. And, you know, so I was here in Austin, felt like I needed to, in the mid 90s, Austin was not the city it is today and medical facilities weren't what they are today. And so I knew I had to leave. So I headed over to Houston, consulted with MD Anderson, and then, you know, heard about a doctor at Indiana University, Larry Einhorn, who had really pioneered the cure for my disease. And I literally flew from Houston straight to Indianapolis, met with him and his team, because it was going to require, you know, not just oncologists, but surgeons and nurses. And I got a good feel off him. And I said, I'm not leaving. I literally stayed in Indiana.
Wow.
For the entire time I was being treated. And the point is that I knew that it was a coin toss if I lived or I died, right?
Right.
But I also knew that if I was going to die, that I was going to die at peace, that I had done I had researched all of my options. And so if at that point it didn't work, well, it just, obviously I'd be sad. My friends and family would be sad, but I was going to go out knowing that I did everything I could. And, you know, I would have no doubts. I wouldn't be sitting here going, well, gosh, maybe I should have gone and consulted with that other doctor or that other doctor or that, you know, clinic. Or I was like, fuck it. I'm going to die knowing that I gave it everything I had.
That's huge. That's huge. And that moment of death, that awakening of effort, right?
The important stuff, everything comes crashing down right inside of you. It's kind of the defining moment.
Yeah. I mean, you guys know it better. You guys know it better than all of us. I mean, than athletes or people like me. I mean, the other day I had Dakota Meyer on my show and, you know, he was talking about that day in Afghanistan and he said, and I mean, this is what he says. And I have no reason not to believe it. He said, I didn't think I was going to die. I knew I was going to die. I mean, somebody says that. That's some shit right there. I mean, that is crazy.
Yeah, man, you said it earlier. I don't mean to go back to this, but it's kind of one of them deals when you're like, hey, look, man, I got sick. And what pushed me was to get back up on the bike. And if you're following me on this and help me out, I've been sitting on this for a second. I don't want to say this to you, man. You know, as Americans, this country's great. Look, you took a dump, right? We all did that. And we take every now and again, we'll step back into it by accident. And that's what you did. You took, you know, you shit, stepped in it, but you drug it around the house a little bit, right? And we all do that. We all make mistakes, man. When you're competing at a level that you were, and I always thought about this. I was like, man, look, all he started out was damn riding that bike, right? He wanted to win. Then he got cancer. In order to stay alive, he had to ride that bike. And then overcoming the cancer and then winning, you developed this world that wasn't even the one you wanted to start with. Curing cancer, live strong. That freaking bracelet got me out of where I was at, right? I wanted one of those yellow bracelets so damn bad you couldn't find them. And then you got hit. All right, you got hit
hard, and now you're down. I've been waiting to see, and I have been seeing what kind of champion you really are. On the bicycle, that was, man, that was a road race, but if you got that warrior spirit inside of you, man.
Hell
it's,
yeah.
It's kind of one of those, somebody asked me this a long time ago, if they were born or if they were made. And I think we're born, and then your life dictates what kind of warrior you're going to become.
Yeah.
And as you get, I mean, goddamn, man, you have to do everything you can to stay on that bike so you will survive, to keep your family alive, and then everybody who's depending on you, right? And it's you don't think about the existential stuff because, man, I just have to stay on this bike to survive. And I get that, man. I had to draw a line and crawl to it, and that's all I had. When you're in that world, that's all that exists. It's not personal. I'm here for a reason.
And, to live.
Yeah, to live. Because you got hit in the public, and those of us who, you know, thrive in the public, if you fail in it, it's just, it's equal, just on the other side of it.
You know, I caught myself, I was on Dave and I's mutual friend Aubrey's show the other day, and, you know, I had this comparison between lamenting and learning, right?
Yeah.
So it's, I don't lament, right? And I don't always learn, but if I didn't in the past, I think now I've kind of figured that part out, but, and by the way, too, I mean, for a father with young, healthy, energetic kids, like in their eyes, and by the way, they are well aware of everything. In their eyes, I gotta be the man, you know, I gotta be awesome. Energetic and inspiring and fun and, you know, fucking run around and, you know, do stupid shit like I do every day that they laugh at and their friends laugh at. Like that's
what a champion does.
Responsibility.
You were down and now you're back up and the kids are everything, right? It changes the whole dynamic.
Focus is your whole world.
Yep.
It has to. Well, Lance, one of the things, obviously you have this existential moment of your own mortality smack you in the face. Then all of a sudden, like you said, you shifted that mindset to where the win at all costs became that driving focus. And you know, I've gone back and I've read a truckload of the recent articles about the magnitude. And I know you will never say this. You'll never be the guy that comes out. But there was, 87% of the guys that were in top 10 finishes of the years you want were all either admitted doping, they were part of the doping, they participated in doping. So it was across the entire spectrum of the sport. So what we have to do at some point say is the effort and the work that went in on that playing field was substantial. And not only did you win the Tour de France, but you won it 7 times. In the,
that's crazy, right?
I mean, seven times, man.
Right.
And so what I want to, what I'd like to see is, to give your perspective on the flip side of the never quit mindset, that mindset where, you know, where you have that constant front sight focus, where you have just the unrelenting drive to win. What is that space like, and why can it be detrimental?
Well, it's an advantage when, I mean, you can break it all the way down to the second, right? So if you're out, let's just say your training day was a 5-hour day that included, you know, 5 10-minute max efforts or whatever. I mean, that's, you know, and you know, that's where an athlete or a person, you know, they either give it their all or they just kind of go through the motions. Right. And so that's all about intensity and commitment. And in that set, you know, all the way down to that specific interval, it's advantageous. And then, you know, you get to the race, you're looking around your competition, your drive and intensity it's advantageous there. But when you get off the bike and say, for example, I'm just telling you exactly what I did. I mean, you go into a press conference, some journalist asks you some question, like, and you're like, what the fuck, who the fuck are you? Like, are you trying to take me on?
Right.
Are you really trying? I mean, that, and then, you know, a teammate leaves the team and starts accusing you or starts saying something. And you're like, are you really, you want to fuck with me? And so then that becomes a fight. Like, those are all, I mean, all that shit was so ill-advised that, I mean, I just set myself up for exactly what happened. And by the way, while we're at it, I wouldn't change a goddamn thing, because the way I walk around now is exactly the way that I want to walk around. And when I'm, and what I mean is that I needed this. Like, I was a fucking raging asshole that thought he was completely untouchable.
I feel
it. And if it didn't happen, there's no telling what I'd be doing right now. It would not be healthy. Mm. It wouldn't be what a father of five should be doing. It wouldn't be what a husband should be doing. I mean, it was, there was no boundaries. And so this shit came along, and at the time I was like, well, this is bullshit. This ain't fair. But, you know, said all this, like, and felt it. Well, you know what? I've lived with it, and I gained a lot of context and perspective on what went down. And I mean it. I wouldn't change a damn thing.
Lance, from what you're saying, this really reminds me of something that we deal with in our community, and that's the ability to turn it off. That's the ability to turn it off. And I'm curious, looking back now, or from what you've learned in this process, what advice would you give as far as learning how to do that, recognizing that you're doing it wrong, to somebody in whatever field they're in where this applies?
I mean, the similarities are eerie, and it doesn't have to be me. It could be any athlete, right? And shit. I mean, my story was much easier to transition because I had two sports, quote unquote. I had cycling, and then I had cancer, right? So I was, Live Strong was cranking. We were raising money. We were helping people. We were saving lives. We were creating awareness. And we were doing a lot of great stuff. So I had that to go funnel my energy into, right? Most athletes, or most warrior soldiers, service members, they don't have, I mean, before we started, we were talking about Tim Kennedy. Fucking Tim Kennedy is re-enlisting. Like, he's a war hog. I'm like, Tim, what are you doing? Like, you know, you can't do this when you're 80.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean anything coming from me, because I've never been there, and I've never felt what that's like, and felt what, you know, what it's like to come home to Texas or Connecticut or wherever you got to go home. And all of a sudden, you're going from 100 miles an hour to 7, mm-hmm. and you're like, this sucks.
Yeah.
And so, man, it's a very, you see it a lot in sport. I mean, every day you read about it, you watch it, dudes come home. Look, athletes, when they're at the top of their game, that A, they're making a lot of money. B, chicks are everywhere. C, you don't ever have to wait for a table. D, everything's free. And then seemingly overnight, all of those things reverse completely.
Wow.
And dudes just, they go off the rails. They're like, whoa, what happened to the hot chicks? What happened to the, I got to wait in line. I got to wait for a table. Are you kidding? Like, it's, I got to pay for shit. Like, it is, you know, who's doing an interesting thing on this is Nate Boyer. So Boyer, I don't know if you guys have followed Nate Boyer's story, but he's actually pairing up athletes and you guys to train together and do stuff together, just to ease that transition for both parties.
Oh no, I a few years back, the Miami Dolphins brought me in to do a speech about that with their players, and they had just gone through the Richie Incognito thing where they were really struggling with identity. And I remember they brought me in, and it was like, because my transition out of teams was abysmal. I mean, I was the guy going 100 miles an hour on the I-95 with no shirt on after drinking a bottle of tequila, hoping I died because I had no identity, right, because of how difficult that was. And so the concept of reestablishing purpose after your world crashes in on you is perhaps the greatest challenge that we face as human beings. And the funny thing is, we all go through it over the course of our lifetime. It's just, for some of us, it's coming out of the special, it's out of the special operations. For those of us that, like you, Lance, it's being the biggest sports figure in the world to being the most hated sports figure in the world.
I like to add that too. And I may be off I'm saying this wrong, but then basically what happened is you got locked into the ride, right? I mean, that's
totally
the training we go through is not that much different than yours in the intensity of it, right? And it's physically and mentally, you're taking both beatings for an ultimate end game, and ours is to go out and prove ourselves. Same with you. And if you got a team pushing you, like I get you took the hit for this and you went down and you're the one suffering, but you were in a team event and the sponsors, and it's just like with us, man. If they see an animal that they can push as hard as humanly possible,
totally,
they're going to do it, right? And once you get locked into the ride, you're in there. And that's why coming off, especially for, we were talking about this the other day, with the first appointment into Baghdad. 2 days later, I was home driving, just like you were saying, right?
Yeah.
It's like, man, this feels weird. It's that. And after, what, 6-7 days, you needed to get back to the team and back into the life, because the normal stuff was just as boring as all, and especially if you don't have kids or anything like that. Yeah. And if, with you being locked into the ride, it just wasn't on the bike. It was
free
table. Yeah, all that stuff. So when you got off of it, man, it all went away. It came crashing down. And it's hard, man. It's hard to shift that off.
So the question I got for you now, Lance, is with the cancer, with the grind to get the 7 tours, with the facing your demons as publicly as any other human being in history has had to do, what are the never quit principles you adhere to today to wake up, to be a good father, to be a good businessman, to be a good friend to people who are still in your life?
I mean, that's a great question. I wish I could impart some. I'd love to say, well, here's number one, Dave. And here's number two, Mark. Here's number two. Just do this. And it's, I don't, I mean, other than, just feeling a tremendous sense of responsibility to my family and to do right by them. Maybe I do. Maybe I just haven't had the wisdom to sit down and crystallize those and put those down. It's probably, I probably ought to give that some thought. But I've just sort of made this up as I've gone along. And, and look, I haven't gone along alone, right? I mean, I'm not going to be some giant wuss and say, I don't need any help. Like, I mean, I see a therapist. My family sees a therapist. My wife and I mean, we do, I mean, we work this shit. Like, it's not just like, amen, oh, it'll all work. No, we do the work. And outside of that, I sit with people that were fans and then hated me. But for whatever reason, they've come back into my world. Like, hey, I just want to have a call. And I'll go sit through that and let them just fucking just tee off on me. Right. And that's, it has helped me. It's helped me understand what, because we all just kind of think about what we went through, what our families went through. We don't think about what John Doe went through, some dude you never even knew lived or existed or cared about you. But I tell you what, you go sit with that person, you let them tell you what it was like to be a defender for so long and then to look like a total asshole at the end of it all. You do a few of those sit downs.
Wow.
Humbling.
What I love most about your perspective is I love the duality that you bring forth in the concept of process, right? And we understand when you talk about down to the second in that sprint, or down to the second in that workout, or breaking down your day, your week, your month in terms of trying to achieve this perspective and what goes into that mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. But now, man, you're in that, you're regenerating a process for healing, for moving into a space of forgiveness, man. Moving into a space where you can have a perspective then now in the future where you can say, hey, when you're in front of an audience or on a podcast or in front of your children, say, hey, listen, here are the things that you need to think about. These are the things that really stood out to me. Is your future, does it look like that for you, or are you still in the day to day? Are you hope to build out a process like that in some capacity once again, or are you just going to try and go day to day?
No. First of all, I just want to say this because you brought it up. You brought up the word forgiveness, and I don't know what you're supposed to do, but I will never ask for forgiveness. Huh. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do it because I understand that is not an option for a lot of people. And so I'm not going to sit. What I will do is say, I get it. And I'm, you know, happy. I'm sorry. If you can't come around, I understand that. And so I'm not. So it's you're either on the team, not on the team, or you're in flux, right? It's like kind of a third, right. a third. But it's not. I'm not gonna. I understand people's raw emotions too much to waste my time, their time, or anybody's time. You know what you asked about, David, is what I call offense, right? So at what point in your life, like I was playing defense, right? You know, from 2012 till however when I was just, it was full defense mode, legally defensive, publicly defensive, just defense. And then you're sort of, then it's kind of halftime, right? And then you go play, and then you play offense. And so that's where I'm at now. It was, you know, look, just, and I'm not fucking Howard Stern or anything, but I mean, just creating your own media channel, creating a podcast, getting out there, meeting interesting people, creating new businesses, traveling the world and speaking, doing interviews. That is, now you're playing offense.
Nice.
Well, if you don't tell your story, somebody else is gonna. If you don't get out there and open up, mm-hmm. and tell people what's going on and show that you're actually trying to do that, somebody mm-hmm. else will talk for you and probably put you deeper in that hole.
Wow.
So, I mean, you doing that it's giving people a channel to get to you. And a lot of people hold on. I mean, they've forgiven you already, and I know you're not looking for that, but they haven't had the opportunity to vent to you. And when you're talking about letting people open up and talk, we do that in my family. My doc gave me a great piece of advice first time I upset my wife. He's like, just go call it the walk. Just go on a walk and let her vent and get everything out. Don't say not one word. Don't say one word until she gets everything out. And even when she's done talking, be like, I know there's more. Keep going. Keep going. I know there's more. I got more thinking in my head. Come on. I know you got more. And once they do, once they talk about it and they get it out in the open and they actually air their frustrations and you can sit there and look at them and have that conversation without being on the offense and pounding, because let's be frank, guys like us are experts at verbal assault, even physical on top of that. But I mean, the mental attitude it takes because of our aggression and the never quit, always win. Man, we can give somebody a verbal lashing that they're not even ready for.
Right.
So when you take that step back, shut your mouth, listen a minute, it kind of opens up and lets people vent, I guess, is their frustration. Yeah, you know, it lets them talk to you openly, and you're doing that, so.
The only thing I would add, Mark, is that, you know, the only thing I'd add is I agree with you that if you don't tell your story, other people will. But if speaking about my situation, I mean, if I go back to 2012 and 13, I mean, when it was a book a month, there was a documentary every 6 months, there was a feature film. I mean, when it's of that magnitude and the fire hose is that big, you cannot tell your story. Let me tell you something. There is nobody listening. And so you got to just, and that's where, I mean, I did a couple of interviews and I mean, this shit went down like a fart in church. I mean, it was like, I was like, okay.
You cleared the room with it
anymore. Yeah. I'm like, I get it. All right. I got to just let this, I Wave. Have to let this run its course.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
Yeah. You said exactly right. You're right. Like there's no, you couldn't get it out, not with the barrage you were taking. And when you start getting hit so freaking hard by every side, and there is literally, you can't think there's anything. I mean, you kind of settle down into your area and you just tell yourself, all right, this is where I'm going to start taking a pounding. And that's what you do, man. You just take that pounding
And then the whisper turns back to your voice, because eventually people are going to get, they're going to get tired of whipping on you. I mean, that's a human kind of thing. And especially if they see you coming back out and saying, yeah, you're right. Hit me, you know, hit me with all you got. And you're still standing. And that's what we, okay, welcome to Team Never Quit, brother. You know, because you just kind of just stand there. You stood up and standing. Next, you'll start talking. And that's what you're doing, man. You build your reputation back up, not them.
Well, what I love about that concept of taking the beating, and I love that you openly admit that that's what needed to happen for you personally, as well as for, you know, society as a whole. But what I want to know, Lance, and this is, I know you got to run here. We could wrap up with this. What is the core strength that you use to stand up, to take the beating? What is the core thing that gives you the strength to take that foot, to take that step forward every single day to get back in the race, to get back in the fight? What is it?
Look, it's an unfair advantage because most people in my situation don't have what I have. And that's, I knew, I mean, it's when it started, right? It got worse and worse and worse. And I'm like, all right, this is terrible. But every day I was like, but this is not the worst thing to ever happen to me. Like I go back to 96 and you know, what we just talked about a little while ago, you know, I just used that as a thing that reset the scale for me. I'm like, okay, yes, this completely sucks, but I have been through worse and I have survived worse. And so again, it's an unfair advantage because not many people that have been publicly shamed can sit there and say that. They can't say that they had cancer or they lost a child or they, I mean, all of the bad things that you know, as fathers, that would just rock you to the core. You know, so I just sat there and thought, okay, and I'm going to take it. And I know that it's going to be difficult. And again, not just on me, but on my family and friends. I hear myself say this. I've drawn a lot on my cancer journey, right? I drew a lot on that when it came to training and winning, and then I went back and drew on it here. And then the only other thing too I'll say, and I speak about this a lot, and it's very important to me, is that I lost a lot of friends in this process. And I careful how I say that, because if you lose those people through this process, they really weren't your friends. Hmm. But what I have done in the process, which was a real surprise to me, is I've gained a lot of friends.
Wow.
And it sucks to lose friends. It sucks to have thought somebody was your friend and it turns out they weren't. And so if zero is neutral, if that's a -3, I tell you what, somebody leans into you and taps you on the shoulder and is like, man, let's go do something. I'm like, where'd you come from? They're like, dude, I love you. I've always been here. I didn't need to be sipping champagne and getting my photo here and there, or, you know, being in LA at some rock star party. No, but I'm here right now. And so if losing one is a -3, that person that taps you on the shoulder and says that, shit, that's a +300. And so you just, those little things on a daily basis, or even a month, whenever, that kind of stuff is immeasurable.
Oh, yeah. Amen. It's not that guy bailing you out of jail. It's that one in there with you.
Amen.
I love that point.
Well, listen, Lance, I'll tell you what, and I can't speak for these two knuckle draggers, but I'll tell you what, I certainly appreciate you. I forgive you. And I'm just honored that you would take the time out of your day to come on our show and share the incredible, amazing, really profound perspective and wisdom that you had with our, that you have with our listeners, man. And I'm praying for you on your journey, and just thank you, brother. It means the world to me and you guys too, I assume.
And there's so much that we've cracked the surface with Lance, I think. I mean, we would love to have you come back on at some point. I think there's so much more we could talk about.
I'm happy to.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was
just one thing before y'all hang up on me is I'm gonna Marcus. So you mentioned your I will never ever forget your teammates coming with the tour was in Germany that day in 2005, and they showed up and they gave me a hat and they gave me a pin. It's big. It's like a pin. It's like you know the seal. It's like a gold pin that's got like two things. You know what I'm talking about.
It weighs like 20 pounds.
Yeah. So there were a lot of people that would make their way to our hotel rooms, and I was like, what the hell is this person doing here? But that was such a special day for me. And so I'm going to, David, when we hang up, I'm going to text you this. I'm staring at the hat. I would never, ever, ever lose this hat.
Wow. That's awesome.
And I'm going to go down to my office and I'm going to get the pin. I'm going to send you the picture. Just you can show it to Marcus, but I stuff like that. I mean, I was given all kinds of bullshit over the years, as you can imagine. But this was some of the most my prized possession. So I just want you to know that it's. I mean, moved houses a couple times, been all over the world. I will never, ever, ever lose these two items.
I appreciate that, man. Yeah, it was an honor to watch you ride and. Man, it's going to be an honor to watch you finish out the next part of your life as well. And that was, man, 2005 was a rough year for us. Oh, man, that was, that's cool that you did that, though. It means a lot. I appreciate that. So do all the guys. I know it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, thank you, my brother. God bless you, and we'll see you soon, bro.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yes, sir.
Bye. Bro. All I gotta say is, holy shit. When you talk about the fall from grace, when you talk about a public shaming on the most epic of epic levels, man, that would destroy 99.9999% of the people. They would be that dude that's in that
just crawled into a hole, curled up,
conditioned
and
black,
died.
Right, conditioned black, OBE, overcome by events, sucking their thumb in the corner,
mama.
Right, that would happen, bro. This dude is raising five kids. He's a solid husband again. He's doing the work with his counselors. He's doing the work with his friends. He's doing the work with the people he wronged. He's doing the work with the public. he's out teaching. He's speaking. He's coming on shows to try and express his viewpoint and what it's like. Dude.
And he's still not out of the woods.
Oh, he's hated, man. He's hated.
Not just in that regard. He's still in litigation with U.S. government.
$100 million
right now. He's possibly on the hook for that.
$100 million. They want to take his house. They want to garnish his wages. I can't have my wages garnished. Remember Fletch? Nobody remembers that. Dude, that's a Fletch reference. We haven't had one of those yet, right? And they want to garnish his wages for the rest of the guy's life. That's hardcore, Marcus. What do you think?
Yeah, you got one hell of a line to walk now.
I call it the Jericho Mile.
Yeah. No, you're right, man. I mean, remember back in the day when he was just cleaning that. I mean, man of the year, athlete of the year.
Bro, he hung out with Clinton, Obama, Bushes. I mean, this dude was the biggest sports figure, one of the biggest figures, celebrities in the world.
You find out what a man's really made of, right, when you jerk everything away from him.
Take it all. That's an axe, I believe.
It's just the take. All the white noise is gone. It's kind of one of them. Just like, hey, man, you better hope all the skills and everything you possess is inside. Like when you're standing in front of the mirror naked, are you worthless, or is it inside? Is the value inside yourself and not what you own? And the temperament and the mindset. They can't quit. Got a family, just like you couldn't quit on that bike. He's not gonna quit now.
Well, here's the interesting thing, and this is something I want to ask the two of you. That existential reality where, like, I'm going to die right now.
Oh, that sucks.
And and what it does to your frame of reference, right, of what's important.
It's singular. Man, when you get down to that level, brother, man, with Laura, we talked about that.
Yeah.
It's breathing.
Right? One breath.
Leg, right?
Yeah.
Just one breath.
It's
man.
A moment that's completely free of other distractions.
Like that's said, genius.
It's singularity. Probably one of the purest moment ever.
It's a full concentrate. You are fully engaged in that moment.
Of your own humanity, right? Life. Yeah. I guess that's the literal life flashes before your eyes. The one you're living and the path that you have to walk to get out of there, you have no idea what's ahead. Everything's been shifted. I mean, you're going down on one thing and you can actually see the future, right? That's when you start focusing on your star and nothing else around it. You get blinded by that light. Reach out and you grab and you fall, right?
Well, in so many other activities you're involved in, you can be distracted to some degree or another, thinking about other things. But in that, and it's probably part of your just deeply embedded reptilian brain survival mechanism, you're just all in on that moment to get through that moment to survive it.
Right.
That's probably where that comes from.
All right. You ready?
Exactly.
Now, I don't know if you guys have been through... I don't think we can even fathom the magnitude of his fall from grace. You can't even, unless you've been in that. So let's ponder it a little bit. Let's ponder it from the outsider's perspective. All right. And let's go. All right. Is the moment when all of a sudden he went from, he was fighting. They stripped him of his titles. The report comes out. And he says, all right, I'm going to admit it the next day, and boom. Is it a similar feeling, do you believe, than the feeling he felt when they looked at him and said, you got a 50-50 shot of living or dying?
No.
No? It's not the same?
No.
Because he lost. In one day, he lost $75 million. In one day, he went from the world's most... Well, by then it would fell a little bit from grace, but he was still holding on. There was, you know.
Yeah, but that's all existential stuff, man. One of them does, you can make that back. Your life flash, something on the inside, right? It's kind of beating at you and tearing you down, and you don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
At least in this, the other fight, and you can see, and there's rules. Right? Basically, if everybody's suing him and coming after him, there's rules involved with that. And to take the stress off of the individual, I would imagine.
Exactly. And I think just to further expand on that, he could see the one coming from, a ways off.
He knew it was inevitable.
Where the other one is.
Did he talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Jumping out of an airplane.
Yeah. The anticipation, right?
And sweating all
the time. He just texted that right there, bro. Yeah. How cool is that?
Yeah.
I'm staring at a text from Lance. He just texted us after he hung out of the hat, the Team 10 hat, the trident, and the pack.
Is this big? Thing.
This giant ridiculous.
Oh yeah, that's the giant.
This giant ridiculous
Navy band.
Yeah, yeah, right. This gaudy.
So great.
You know what I thought? He said he had an unfair advantage of being able to look back. This is when he was going through the whole public, fall from grace. Being able to look back and rely on his never quit experience of the cancer, and him saying that was something that was kind of unique to him. I think people are in one of two situations. A, you've never been through a never quit experience, of which when you're in the middle of it, you can say, well, once I make it through this, then I will have something to lean on in the future.
Uh-huh.
Right? Or you've been through that and you have something to lean back on.
Well, check it out. You can't take that away from him. You can't remove a life and death situation that you can't remove that no matter how. Like all the sponsorships, the bicycles, the houses, and all those kind of good memories you have can actually be overshadowed. Like, for instance, his friends, right? He was best friends, and then they left. That cancer, man, you can't steal that from him. That's one of those grounded pillars you can reach to. To a starting block.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a setback. It's a starting block.
That's exactly what I'm saying, the importance of having that.
Right.
Well, here's what I believe, right? I believe every single person on the planet has some never quit story, right? Is it as substantial as facing cancer? Maybe not. But is it as substantial as facing the gunfire from someone who wants to kill you? Maybe not. But there's something we all go through, whether it's a broken home, whether it's being raped or tortured or mentally abused growing up, whether it's growing up in poverty, whether it's being in a horrific relationship or turned down, or
it doesn't have to be things that big. It can be simply a minor injury that you received, and it was kind of difficult to get through, but it's not worth something you'd brag about. They don't have to be these large events
at all.
They don't, and they build on each other. I think
that's what brother. Thank you so much for saying that's exactly what Lance is saying. They build on each other. And it's funny, they don't build on each other in terms of the perspective of, oh, through our successes, we enhance them and they make us better and all this. But it's typically we build on them through our failures, through our tragedies, through our hardships. And look at him, cancer, right? Climbing to the top of the food chain
freaking memoirs are going to be epic.
Brother! And it's now building back again, trying to reestablish in his sphere of influence, his world, is the immediacy of the world, the people that truly love him. Because what is the greatest starting block that we have for our self-worth, for our relevance, is how others love us.
Family, yeah.
Right? Mm. That's how we gauge our relevance in this world. And he has that, man. You can't take that away.
Well, you gauge your relevance off of your value to your people, and
right?
Not existent money. All that can go away. And when it does, I mean, are you still as valuable as you were with all that? Has any of his teammates said what it was like going through all that?
Oh, yeah. There's been huge...
No, not just... I'm not talking about bashing them and doing all that. I'm talking about the behind the scenes, the drive. Like, he come in there and he's like, you know, losing had to completely go out of the mindset. Like, we can't do this. And his drive is like, to pull those guys. I'd like to know what it was like for them.
Well, there's this quote.
Would have pushed the bar up there. I know what you're saying.
Right?
Well.
Yeah. You go as fast. Yeah.
You're just going to ask.
I mean, some of them guys by nature, no
it's
matter.
It's the man that you require the most out of yourself.
Exactly. Because if you don't
That's
have
what
it.
Those people around you do.
Because they had to go through all that as well. Not only did they have to ride, but they had to deal with all that other stuff, man.
Pressure.
The pressure's on them is
probably
greater, right? They had to keep a secret.
I'll never forget my CEO at Team One came in one time, and there was a Liberty incident that had popped up, and we were getting getting lectured. The team was getting lectured by I forget who it was. I think it was our command master chief at the time. And then all of a sudden, the CEO walked up, and we're all like, oh, this dude's going to crush us. He's going to shut us down, right? No fun one. And he gets in there, and he says, listen, gentlemen, if there's anything I've learned in all my years in the teams, is you can't feed a tiger milk. Don't be dumb. That is all. And so my point of telling that is when you're in the fight, you're going to do anything to win a fight, right? And people all the time ask me about that moral ambiguity that exists within the special operations world. Mm-hmm. And so, listen, to imagine that you at some point can live a holier than now life, a truly righteous life, is just inaccurate. We're sinners, man. We all can be pulled to one side or the other based on...
That's called life.
Right?
You got to walk down a path. If you stand in the middle, you ain't going to go nowhere. And then everybody else will be writing your story. Can't make any mistakes unless you get out there and try.
Exactly.
And you can make some monumental ones. I mean, he did. He took a dump, dude. He stepped in it and drug it around the house. And on top of that, he was blaming everybody else for bringing the dog shit in the house, right? Kind of crazy when you look down, you see it's on your foot, right?
Oh,
I'm just laughing because that was had a great analogy you chose to use.
It's the perfect analogy.
Texas.
Yeah, I was like, I almost broke out. I was like, Marcus, did your grandfather or your dad tell
Texas,
you that? Yeah,
he's a Texas boy too, so I knew he'd
get
it.
He got it. Well, listen, if this is your first time listening to the show, man, what a treat. What a outstanding experience, hopefully, that was for you. And we just, the three of us, want to thank you. I mean, thanks for coming. If you want to know more about us, go to our website at tnqpodcast.com. Follow us on social media. And just join us, man. And if you're back for more, man, you just got another doozy. Please get out there. Tell all your family and friends, especially those people that you know and care about, love most, who are in a never quit moment, who are in a moment potentially of shame, man, or you know what? Have them listen to Lance's show, or better yet, maybe you reach out and give them a second chance and say, you know what? Hey, I forgive you. Here's a show I want you to listen. Let's get through this. Because that's ultimately what I took away from the show, is that we're not perfect creatures and we need help. So, and also, if you're out there and you're part of our community, we just want to say, hey, bravo, Zulu, on writing in and sharing your never quit stories with us. Please continue doing that. We're desperately trying to get through as many of those as possible, get them up on the website, and to create this community where we're all connected through the pain of our own struggles, because that's really the component of the human condition that crosses cultural barriers, that crosses where, you know, race and gender and all those things, is that we all live together in the beauty of pain. And so what we try to do is help bring everybody together within that pain. Now,
we're really accumulating some great stories on there.
And those all, really we're really working hard. Go to the website again, under the stories part.
You'll find the stories section. It's on the homepage. You click on there, you'll go deeper, and you'll just find experience and advice.
It really is
motivation,
amazing.
Inspiration, all of that.
So please share the website with your friends. Share, and if you don't know how to subscribe to us, go to your iTunes podcasting app on your phone, type in Team Never Quit, it'll pop right it. Press subscribe, and man, then you can listen to us while you're on the bike of death, while you're running your marathon, while you're at work, while you're driving through traffic, while you're getting hammered, or whether, you know, whatever you're doing in life, you can have us on repeat and just go through, and because I'm sure, I'm 100% positive that there is a show for you. There is a show for you that will get you fired up and get you back in a fight.
Yeah, you'll be so blessed you can listen to Dave more than we have the
your alarm clock. Ringtone.
You know what we ought to do is do a little ringtone for people.
Wake up a ringtone. Dave ringtone collection.
Well, that compilation you did, I played that for a few people and it was made people cry. It was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. All right. Listen. I want to thank God. I want to thank Christ. I want to thank my two daughters. I want to thank my family. I want to thank my friends who've helped me get through an incredibly difficult time recently. I want to thank Lance. Man, and honest God, brother, you are more of an inspiration than you know. I love your humility. I love your owning it. And I also love the fact that you're on the pathway to understanding forgiveness too, brother. I feel you there. I also want to thank the listeners because without y'all, we would be nothing. The show wouldn't exist. We wouldn't keep doing this. It's you. It's the stories you're telling us. You writing in on social media. You writing in your stories. You reaching out and telling us the impact it's having in your life. Man, it is the fuel that keeps the three of us going. It is the fuel that makes us feel like we're really doing something special with our lives now and to continue our service. So thank you. And I want to thank you too. Without you guys being here, we couldn't do it. I appreciate you. I love you. And I thank you very much for it. And I'm blessed, man. Marcus?
Oh, yeah. I can't believe they keep bringing us back on here. It's pretty amazing. We were talking about yesterday.
We're podcasters, right?
You think someday that'll sound really
unbelievable,
cool?
Man? No. Thank y'all. So, you know, I can sit here and thank America all day. Thanks for coming to get me and keeping me alive and putting food on my table. Always, man. It's what a blessing. It's been an honor to walk among them, right?
Yeah, man.
And Lance, brother, thanks for coming on here and dosing out some of that humble pie, brother. I know it's not easy and you got a long road to hoe, but back in 2005, you helped me get past one of my never quit moments, man. Hopefully we can help you get through yours because, man, I think you can do it. I know you want to, and we all make mistakes. Those of us who try exceptionally hard get blinded by things every now and again, and it's human, right? Kind of American thing is, no matter how high they lift you and how high they crash you down, we always expect you to get back on the bike, right? That's what we're waiting to see. And we praise you, and then we beat your ass. Now, what do you got for us? And I know, man, like I said, you're gonna make it back. So thank you, brother. I'm out.
Out.
Never quit radio.